lots on the catch-up today, Ed Cavalli.
Oh, yeah. Clive Palmer, on after being in court with a pillow, spoke to him. That was good stuff. Also, we had a bit of... Robin, you gave us some sex stats.
I know. That turned into a chat about babies. That wasn't what I was expecting, I have to say.
I preferred when we had that investigation in dogs farting. It was a real hard-hitting one, that one. Lifted the lid.
And the courtesy wave. It is dead, people. It's absolutely dead.
A lot on. Enjoy the catch-up.
This Marto, Ed and Robin catch-up for Morgan and Wacker Harley-Davidson. Grab a new Harley from Morgan and Wacker Harley-Davidson and they'll give you up to $3,000 to customise it. 104.5, the new Triple M.
Yeah, there's a new study out of the States, which is actually really interesting. Anyway, I'll share that with you just before 7. But honestly, I want you to honestly tell me the answer to this question. When you're on the road and someone lets you in, do you do the courtesy wave?
God, yeah.
Do you honestly every time?
I'm like a special kitty. I will wave and wave and wave. I made that part of my life a number of years ago.
So it was a conscious choice and you are that guy.
Be enthusiastic.
Great. Ed.
Yeah, always. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Brendo.
Hand out the window.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. 100% of the time. Yes.
Okay. Well, every time I ask this question of anyone I know, they say yes. And yet, on the road in Brisbane, when I'm driving, and I do a lot of driving, I go out to Ipswich a lot, I reckon 4 out of 5 times people don't do the courtesy wave.
Really?
Yes.
What?
Yes. I don't understand. I genuinely don't understand why that is such a big deal. Obviously, everyone in this room is saying, yes, we do. But people don't. They don't courtesy wave.
I reckon they do.
I don't.
I'm so impressed by everybody.
Really? You think 100% of the time people will go, thanks very much? Because you're doing your special
wave. 90%? No, I do it when they let me in. I don't. If I let somebody in, I don't start the wave. I let them start the wave.
Okay. But yeah, right. If they don't start, if someone doesn't give you the courtesy wave, what do you do? Do you react?
I worry about it. I think you're a dick.
I don't. I wave at them.
Ah, righto.
I'm the person in the back going, thanks, no worries.
I'll wave when somebody toots at me in anger. If you do a happy wave, nothing diffuses. Where do they go to next?
That's a good idea.
If they're really angry at you for doing something, you do a happy wave again. It makes them angrier.
I know, and the statistics in this room do not back me up here, but I'm going to say that the courtesy wave is dead.
Jeez, no way in the world. All right, ask everyone else. Because I reckon the further you go out of a biggest, you know, we live in a busy city, the more lonely and wide you get, the further you go out west. So, if you got a long drive, everyone waves to each other, and that's, you're not doing anything. You're just going, oh, there's not many of us out here. I better give that bloke a wave.
Oh, like truckies. Truckies are lovely.
You can't see them. They're too high up.
No, but they're always, if you pass a truckie, you know, they'll often give you a little, I think I really like a truckie, but everyone else, I'm sorry. I think it's dead.
Is the courtesy wave alive and well in Brisbane or is it dead? Do you get courtesy waves? Do you give courtesy waves?
Well, right now, you're driving up the M1 and people let you in. Are you giving a little nod and a wave and everything else? God, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, but I will actually give a prize to someone if they're brave enough to admit they never give a courtesy wave because these people exist. Oh, they
why
do.
Are you rewarding them?
Because I want to know what is going on in your head that you don't feel the need to courtesy wave.
But you have to convert to be a courtesy waver, though, to get the prize.
Aw. You sure? They may not come.
Let Robin try, yeah.
Anyway, Troy of Camp Hill, do you think it's dead?
Unfortunately, it's not going real well. I think it can be revived. Bring back the wave should be our new cry call. But I just, you know, driving around Brisbane, you let people in and they just take it as their God-given right. And I'm thinking, you know, how hard is it to lift your hand off the steering wheel and say, yeah, cheers for that?
Gorgeous.
Thank you, Troy.
We've got to stop texting, I suppose. It's a worry.
So true, but he's proven my point. Thank you, Troy. Yeah. Greg of Toowong, what about the courtesy wave?
No, it's dead. I'm a bus driver and we've just been sitting here with a group of our mates listening to you guys and we're laughing. We can't believe how nobody waves when we let them in. We do it all the time.
Go do that. Go to wave to a bus. People think because you're up high, Greg, and that you're on out there all the time that you don't care.
Let's confront something, Greg.
Got to wave to a bus.
But yeah. Ed, the simple fact is, you know how you hit the right blinker and you think you've got a God-given right? Well, you do. It's the law that you just start going.
It is the law, so yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why we all feel a bit...
People don't know that, Greg.
We've got
people...
5 seconds. Yeah, but it's 5 seconds. It's actually in the rule book, and it came out 34 years ago.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
If you haven't read a rule book in 34 years, you know, come on.
When you put the blinker on coming out of a bus stop and you just take off and virtually, you know, even if a car's near your back light, will you wave to people if they pull up?
Yeah, I always do.
Listen, buddy, you know what? I'm a cyclist, as you probably know, and during the day when buses are around, you guys have been a lot better in the last few years. Thank you very much.
No worries. But we're lucky too because there's good cycling tracks to help, you know, save us trying to
get around them.
We don't want to be washing you guys off the front.
No.
Well, no, there's been more opportunities to get cyclists off the road. It's been great what the council have done.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that.
Aidan of Fairfield. Oh, you have a theory. This is good. What do you reckon it is?
Yeah, look, when I'm driving around, you let the tradies around Brisbane, they always give you a wave. They let you in. I give them a wave. They're a lot more appreciative for what you do. But when you're driving through the city in the afternoons and mornings in the traffic and everything, all the office workers, they don't care. They don't even look at you.
You have nailed it, Aidan. You have nailed it. That's right. All ute drivers will give the courtesy wave. Because I'm driving around in a ute, I give it, I get it, and all the rest of it. He's saying that anyone in their little cars driving home, you know, the office, I don't know what you call them, office workers, but non-tradies, don't wave.
Do you agree with that, Ed?
I would think that people who are on the road more are more courteous. That's what I always
think.
What about
van drivers?
Buses, vans, curious, that type of thing. Yeah. More the people are on the road, the more courteous they
call.
Seem to be.
So commuters, pure commuters going in and out of the city, maybe aren't waving.
See, I'm telling you. Craig of Browns Plains, what do you reckon about the courtesy wave?
It needs to be brought up with the driving instructors when they're cruising around there taking these people for lessons, you know?
That's a good point, actually.
Well, we just learned that it's in the law that you've got to let a bus in and there'd be people that would have... I mean, I was one of them. I was like, oh, really? I didn't know it was actually written into the law, Craig.
It is. It's written on the back of the buses, as you must give way to them.
What do you reckon about the ute and professional drivers waving to each other? It's just the commuters who don't.
Well, I reckon that's true too. Oh, hold on. Giddy up, all back. Hang on a minute. No, hold on. No, you might be right there.
Okay.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate that.
Nice one.
What just happened there?
He's just having an internal conversation, I think, Craig.
Or did someone just give him a wave?
Maybe. Hey, Luke of Redlands, what do you think? Is the courtesy wave dead?
I think it needs to be taught more often, but I think truckies and tradies are much more likely to do it because, you know, they're generally the ones that get it as well, if they get it. But I don't see many girls doing it these days, especially the younger ones.
Okay, now we're going to blame females. Fair
Luke,
enough.
They're on their phone, mate.
They're doing their makeup.
They are on their phone.
Just females that don't do the courtesy wave.
Younger drivers, Robin.
Younger drivers, maybe.
Younger drivers. And how many times have you been stuck at lights because the first person at the lights, the light has gone green and they're still on their phone looking at it?
Pretty much.
Younger drivers every single time.
I'm serious. Can we analyse this? Maybe come back and visit in a week and get people, everyone, keep an eye out for who is and isn't doing it. Because you've sprung it on us this morning, but I want to have a look at
who's
doing it.
And no one's admitting to not do it. And obviously people don't. And
They're learning. They're listening and they're going, oh, I better start waving.
Yes, wave, people. It's a nice thing to do.
Well, they better start soon because 70% of callers agree that the courtesy wave is dead.
It's not something actually I want to be excited about.
It's a sad, sad day.
Oh, don't play that music. We used to play that music when we had Clive
Palmer. Elephant's Walk.
Baby Elephant's Walk. No more. Well, listen, I think everyone saw Clive Palmer was ordered to appear in court yesterday. He was very, very sick. He claimed to be very sick. And we got him on the line now. Good morning, Clive.
Splutter. Oh, God. Oh, good morning. God, no. Poor Clive's so sick. Sorry, Clive. That's okay, Clive. Oh.
Clive, you've been in court over the last few days, as we've seen on the telly, but you brought your pillow, your vomit bag, and a breathing device.
Yes, that's right, Clive. I brought those items. The pillow is for when I need a nap or do like a hilarious thing like, I'm fat, oh, I'm skinny again, I take it out of my polo shirt. The vomit bag was complimentary on my Tiger Airways flight, and the breathing device I got from a very helpful young man out the front of court. Now, he had some dreadlocks and a Bob Marley singlet. He said, you look stressed. I said, I am, and he gave me the device. I think it might be from Bunnings, because it's got a little bit of garden hose hanging out of the side of it.
Oh, you look a bit like Skacey yesterday. But, Clive, you also told reporters that you'd taken an opiate called, I think, OxyContin or something?
Yeah, where's this going?
For a day in court, it seems like a lot of drugs.
Drugs? How dare you accuse Clive of drugs? I'm a respected member of the community, not some common rugby league player for New Zealand or some gear-mad executive of the Sharks or that other bloke with the tattoos. I'm not some personal trainer who's so mad for headphones they go to Columbia to get them. How dare you?
Look, speaking of training, Clive, you also look like you've lost a whole lot of weight. Well done.
Well then, thank you so much for noticing. Yes, Robert Bailey, under my shirt, I am ripped to the bone. Clive has an 8-pack. Even my abs have abs. I'm cutting up for Ibiza. I'm going on the Gold Coast Titans and their mid-season trip. Luckily, that will definitely be a drug-free zone.
Oh, Clive, you're too good. Good luck in court next week, too, Clive.
Hey, man. Peace, love, and mung beans, man. I think my breathing apparatus might be kicking in. Can you send Clive a brownie, please?
Usually when the mics are off here in the studio, it's just a bit of what are you doing on the weekend? What did you do? Can
Who's
I get your coffee?
Transitioning as a female to a male? And that
not today.
No.
One of the great questions ever you just asked.
Well, I just don't know the answer. I have two rather large dogs and both of them are prone to a bit of flatulence.
Oh, yeah.
I know, it's disgusting. Shocking. And it's a smell that is just so unique. And
what
just
have you just asked me?
Well, my question was, have you ever heard a dog fart?
Dogs do not fart. I've owned plenty, never heard them fart. But last night, we were sitting on the lounge, and just the smell hits you. Because if a human does it, you're ready for the smell.
Because there's a warning often.
Or sometimes there's a laugh or a snigger. Wait for this one. Dog just, there's a dog there, and then the smell's there.
So they can't maybe. Maybe they can't.
Someone must. Someone will have an answer here. We've got vets, we've got dog experts, we've got breeders, we've got everything that listens at this time, Robin. We'll get an answer here. 133353. Have you ever heard a dog break wind? And if not, is there a medical reason as to why you don't hear dogs breaking wind?
Is that a real question?
Well, it kind of is because it suddenly occurred to me I smell them a lot, but I never hear them.
Yeah, they've got to give a signal that one's coming. Don't you reckon?
A little yelp.
Okay. Dirty dog.
Why can't you hear a dog fart?
Like, why don't they lift a leg or a tail or something?
Something.
I got the same. Last night, watching TV, two of us, me and the young fella, we just went, oh.
The dog.
Oh. Why don't they give you a warning?
Well, I've never heard a dog actually
fart. You're allowed to say fart.
I know,
you
can I say just fart. Feel a bit
so
weird
the question
about
is, Ed Cavalli?
Well, why can't you hear dogs breaking wind? Yeah. Tom is from Cannon Hill. What's going on, Tommy?
Yeah, g'day, guys. My dog farts, and you can hear it. He does it all the time.
Oh.
Oh, what sort of dog is it? Is it a special kind of farting dog?
He's a border collie, and he just squirts out his little high-pitched one, and he does them at least a couple of times a week, I hear it, and he has a really embarrassed look on his face afterwards. He knows what he's done.
Oh, a startled expression, would you describe?
He knows what he's done. No, he doesn't.
He has a sheepish look on his face.
No,
Darby
doesn't.
Relief.
Doesn't know what he's done. That's great, though. Thank you, Tom. Okay, so border collies.
I've
Thank
had
you.
Two border collies, and neither of them were farters. Mm. I don't
Mel's
know.
From Kedron. Mel.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, have you got a farting dog?
I've got two farting dogs. I've got an English Staffy and an American Staffy, and they do really noisy ones, but they also do those, you know, the seeping ones.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you can see it.
What can you see?
Oh, you can see their sphincter moving and releasing the air, if I was to be technical on air, yes.
Yeah, you are.
That's very technical.
I got told not to say the A word.
No, well done.
Yeah, but sphincter's fine.
Hey, Mel.
You know
Thank
the loud
you.
Ones? I know this is technical as well, but the ones, are they smellier than the loud ones?
Oh, they're up there. They definitely vary. I don't know which ones are smellier.
Wow.
The silent
is this diet? Is this about... Mel, is this about diet? What do your dogs eat?
My dogs eat a lot of dog food and a lot of human food as well. So there you go. You probably hit the nail on the head. I'm a bad mother.
No, you're not. It's all good.
Loving it.
You sit around looking at your dog's sphincter. There's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, I've just went to the vet west.
Anything on telly? Oh, I think the dog's sphincter moved.
I just went to the Vet West website and they say that dogs that gulp air a lot are the ones that have...
Because that what causes the...
Yeah.
It's air in
so
amongst all the others.
So if they're swallowing a lot of air, so if they're gulping and panting and stuff, then that tends to make it louder.
That's also if they eat too quickly. That's the other one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've heard that somewhere.
What do they do when they eat grass? You know when you spot them down the back?
They're going to throw up.
Oh.
It's a nausea thing, and it helps them get the stuff out of their stomach.
No.
Can you tell I wanted to be a vet and I ended up as a radio announcer?
Pretty good. Well, today we're handling both sides of the coin. Is that Carl from Currumbin?
Yeah, mate.
Hello, mate. What do you got?
Mate, I've got two Bull Arab crosses, mate, and I've seen them asleep, and I've seen one fart and wake itself up.
Okay, do they like their own smell?
I don't know. I don't.
No, isn't it foul?
I don't. That's great.
Did you hear, I can't even remember who it was a couple of calls ago, the look on his dog's face? Do you get,
yeah.
Is there a little smile, just a tooth, just...
Oh, no, they get a bit cheeky and just come up and share it with you, come close to you.
Share it with you.
This is a gift.
What did we used to call them at school? Cupcakes. Everyone remember? Just nod if you're driving along.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's got to be everyone, doesn't it? That's unbelievable.
Anthony of Greenbank, tell us about your puppy.
My golden retriever, he comes up for a pat and then he sits next to you. And then he lets one rip, and you can actually hear it. It's quite loud. And then he sits there smiling with his tongue out, laughing like a Cheshire cat. And then my husky cross, she farts, and she turns around and goes, "Who did that?" And, you know, it's like total lost look.
How many blokes are like that, eh?
That's great.
Oh, my God.
All right, that's got to be it. Surely
dogs
that's
do
it.
Fart, we've solved it.
No, that's enough.
Okay. Okay. Could you get the three S's in there as well? Seeping, squirting, and sphincter.
That's beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful night.
And just
beautiful
to add night. To the glory, if they're overweight, obese, or sedentary, then they're at a much higher risk.
That is so true. Football teams, anyone who's been in a football team, the props always fart more and louder than any other member of the team. There's a university study.
That's a science.
There's a study. Give me $100,000 and I'll
go
away.
Someone needs to do a master's on it right now.
Marto, Ed and Robin, it's the new Triple M. Marto, Ed and Robin, 104.5, the new Triple M, top of 25, mostly sunny. Call anytime, 133353. Gee, I've been looking forward to this, Robin
Bailey. I know you have, and it's official. It's from the Indiana University National Survey of Sexual Health and Behaviour, and they have asked something like 10,000 couples and people and singles about their sex life and just how often it's supposed to be happening.
Where were the people from?
All over, cross-section of America. So I'm not sure where they found them. But
so they're Americans.
Right? Yeah, they're Americans. So, you know, take that or leave it as you want. But just quickly go around the room and tell me how many you think it should be. How many times? Like a week or a month?
But what type of relationship are we talking about?
Any?
Like, is it any? No, you can't do any because it's got to be like married for over 10 years versus we just met.
Okay, well, let me narrow it down. Let's do couples that have been together for over 10 years. There you go. Okay, go there.
A week?
If you want to, you can do a week or a month.
I reckon if you twice a week, you're doing all right, aren't you?
Yeah, okay.
I reckon if you go half a week, you're going all right.
Half a week?
Once every fortnight.
Oh, I thought you meant...
No, once a week. No, actually, once a week. Once a week, going all right.
Brando?
Over 10 years married.
Yeah, over 10 years married. So with the same partner for over 10 years.
Yeah, once a week.
I'm with Ed. I reckon twice a week.
Twice a week.
Yeah.
Okay.
How'd you go?
The average is 7 times a month, which is a little less than twice a week.
Oh, right. Hmm. Oh,
1.5.
What nights?
1.5.
Well, now, here's the thing. They're saying that the big thing out of the survey was that people don't make enough time because what happens is libidos are operating at different levels.
This is my problem.
And now when you've been with someone for over 10 years, you tend to say, okay, Wednesday night, everyone's out, let's go.
Yeah, right.
So your partner might not be on the
Wednesday
night.
That's right. So they're actually saying making time is the important part. But I'm quite surprised. I'm quite surprised it's once a week. I thought it would be a lot less than that.
Oh, less than that?
I did. I thought it would be maybe once or twice a month.
What happened? Mm. We don't have kids yet. You know, my wife is pregnant. So what happens when people always, you know, when kids come along? What happens when kids come along?
Oh, God, you got to plan things.
Yeah, you do.
You got to be strategic. Actually, the kids go to bed early too. So it's all right.
So
the problem is with our job. Yeah, that's right. That's where
so
I struggle. Going to bed at 8:30, you're not going to drag too many off with you.
No, okay. And the other trap for young players, Ed, be really careful of this, is where is the baby going to sleep? Is the baby going to stay in a cot in your room? Is the baby...
No, we're setting up a nursery.
Okay, but
which is
at
my mother-in-law's.
Yes.
I'm just saying, if you ever get to a point where the children end up coming into your room, that is a major passion killer right there. Look at his face. Yeah. Look at his face. It's a thing, Ed. Kids come in and sleep in between you.
Get your own bed.
Oh man, let's just keep that. Yeah. I'm going to play this back to you in 18 months, Ed Cavalli. Seriously, I am.
I never got into my mother's bed. I had a single mother.
If you can't get a child to sleep, you'll do anything.
It's the weirdest thing. You'll be sleeping away, and the kid will be looking at you from about an inch away when you wake up. Because they're at the same height as your head on the bed, aren't they? When they're about two, and they're just looking at you, and then they'll touch your eye or something, and they'll eye poke you, and that's how you wake up.
Yeah, that's it.
And then you go, get in, you just grab one hand.
You get it, that's it. You throw him in because sleep is so fundamentally important to your existence. You'll do it. Look at his face.
Yeah, this is the unsexiest conversation I've ever had. This is it.
I thought it was going to be raunchy.
Sorry.
This is so unsexy.
Sorry, buddy. Welcome to the real world, Ed Cavalli.
Ed and Robin. It's the new AAA.
Hey, Ed, we're talking earlier about Clive Palmer doing the Christopher Scase, and you brought up that thing about Christopher Scase's old house.
One of his old houses. It's in top of the hill in, is it Hamilton?
If you ever drive the ICB and coming on to Kingston Smith Drive going eastwards, okay, and you look up at the Hamilton Hill, there's the huge place right on top with like its acreage. That's the old Bishop's house. Below that was Christopher Scouse's old house.
Well, you have to do 40 along there at the moment, so you've got lots of time to look.
To look up, righto. So he had an enormous house. How many bedrooms did you say?
9.
Whoa, you could Airbnb that sucker.
Wow.
They are. They're trying to sell it, but they've had to drop the price a couple of times, and there's issues to know of like if they sell it, who's going to get the money. I mean, it's not like Christopher Scase to have a tangled web, but what you can do is go and stay there, I believe, on Airbnb.
Individually, or have you got to take all 9 rooms?
No, I don't think so.
You could go as
this Airbnb is everything.
Have you done it?
Everything. We did it that weekend down, and we had to go down to Sydney at Easter time and went, bugger hotels, let's have a go at the Airbnb beach at Manly. It was magnificent. Some rich, spoilt person owned the house, and you moved into their house for the weekend. It was bloody tremendous.
Have you done it, Ed? Did Europe, didn't you, on Airbnb?
Yeah, London, Paris.
Small places?
London, no. Paris, yes. And then I did it in, I've used it for Sydney as well, mate. I've used it when I've had to go to Sydney for work. And I have not had a bad experience yet, although I'll throw one at you. Yeah. Robin, you've got a bit of a dodgy experience, I believe.
My sister went to Cambodia. And they got it online and she showed me the photos afterwards because it was so awful in reality. And it was it looked like this beautiful little like shack. And it was sold as, you know, come and live in the real world with the real people in Cambodia.
That's what it's about.
Yeah, no, it was like a shed that only had 3 walls. And it leaked and the toilet was next to it and all the sewage ran past out from the toilet down. And then the night they were there, the cat had a litter of kittens.
Wonderful.
On the mattress.
Animal husbandry
that
bonus.
They were supposed to be sleeping on.
Jesus.
Unreal.
Okay.
Yeah, not good.
That counts as an
I can't believe they're like a hotel. They include towels and stuff and... They were really good. All the stuff was in the cupboards. Yeah. Just like living in a house.
Yeah, that's the good
ones. I hate hotels.
Do you want to talk about it?
So many of them. Yeah, I do. Airbnb. Have you had a great experience or have you had a disaster anywhere in the world? Could be locally, could be overseas. I've heard that the ones in particular in Southeast Asia, the photographs may not match the reality. I'd love to hear some of that action.
What about Bali? Can you Airbnb in Bali now?
Yes, I think you can.
Oh, staying with Chappelle. That'll be spare soon. Ed, you never finished off. There was obviously one bad moment for you.
From a mate of mine. A mate of mine got this place and he's like, it was like a top floor apartment. It was all awesome. This is in Sydney. And he's like, got there and he was like, great, but he couldn't log on to the Wi-Fi. He's like, where's the Wi-Fi? He finally gets hold of the owner and goes, hey, where's the Wi-Fi? And she goes, if you go into the kitchen, he goes, yeah. She goes, open the top drawer. Yeah. There's a phone. Yeah. Turn it on. It's got some credit on it.
Oh, that was it.
That was the internet.
Oh, get stuff. All right. Well, Wi-Fi is important. I just had one. Bloke doesn't want to go on air, but said friend of his let her house out for 4 days, all right. They came in, turned it into an ice lab and took off. So they've done their cooking and off they go.
That's the house rules.
All right, Deborah is from Albany Creek. Deb, Airbnb, triumph or disaster?
No, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we bought an old 110-year-old Federation home in Tamworth. 18 months we were down there, and we ran it, and it was fantastic. We met the most amazing, amazing people. Because it was a great stop between Sydney and Brisbane, so we used to get people doing the trip either way.
Hey.
We met professors, we met farmers, just the most amazing people. Never a bad experience. And we ran it exactly like a hotel.
Good coin, it paid well.
Look, it did. I was working in an executive position, so my husband ran it. Okay. But you know what? It was it was like two homes under one roof, and so it was sitting there, you know, doing nothing. So we thought, let's do the Airbnb.
Which is what it was meant to
be,
Deb.
And we were always full.
Airbnb. Wow. Let's not forget that the name is Airbnb, i.e. bed and breakfast. So they were trying, and originally it was meant to be like that. It was meant to have that homey feel.
Ah.
So that's a good call, Deb. I like that. There you go. Tamworth.
So the owner's supposed to be there when they designed it, of course.
Originally, you're supposed to get breakfast?
No. Originally the idea was that it was kind of like a halfway between having to provide all that stuff. If you just had a house, you didn't have any of that other stuff, you could go and stay in the house, but it was meant to be that homey feel that hotels don't have.
Oh, good call. Joe from Kedron, you are good or bad?
Fantastic.
Oh, wow. Okay, tell us.
We stayed in Paris in the most amazing apartment. Quite close to the Eiffel Tower. Ooh. And it had such a Parisian feeling about it. We could never have got anything like that by staying in a hotel. Yeah. It was so spacious. We had a beautiful little indoor-outdoor courtyard.
What?
It was just amazing.
Hey, Joe, the one that me and my wife were in, we could, if we held hands and stretched our arms out, we could touch both sides of the place because it was
so
small. It was still very pretty, but that is the thing. There was a hotel next to us, Joe, like actually next to our apartment block. So we looked it up. Okay. It was double the price for a room for what we were getting, a little apartment next door.
So well equipped and it just had such a Parisian feel to it. We just couldn't have asked for anything better. We took
how French are they, Joe? Hey, Joe, when you can't realize how
they're from France.
They're so French. You walk downstairs, and I would say to Tiff all the time, "Look at all these Frenchies. Look at that one. That one's smoking. That one's got a scarf on. That one's smoking. That one's got a Citroen. Oh my God."
Joe's good and all, but you know, having fun. I want somebody who's had a shocker.
Well, the other thing is too. I was just googling. On average, Australians Airbnb hosts have guests 28 nights per year. And earn $4,500.
That's not much.
For a room that's empty the rest of the time, it's pretty good.
Damien from Forestdale, what happened?
Hey, guys, how are you going?
Hey, good.
We've been fortunate enough to stay in the properties in our sport all day, every day. So this is pretty much our life. But this one we booked was a 5-bedroom room in Sydney. On the internet, it looked fantastic. It was beautiful. We've turned up there with a full race team. And turned out that we were staying in a, I guess you would call it a backpacker's lodge. 23 other people in there. And the only thing was dividing the walls between our 4-bedroom apartment that would have been about the size of a laundry was one plaster sheet between the bedroom next door to me. Sheet, not a wall, just a sheet.
No, that's classic Sydney, Damien. If you're ever there, Marta, you and I are there a lot, in the inner city apartment blocks, towards dusk, you know, I like to do a bit of peeping Tom work. If you look up into the...
Don't tell people that.
No, they know. People look up into the... if you look up into the windows with the lights on, everywhere you look, Robin, the sheets that are dividing the living room, because they rent them out to students in Airbnb as a bedroom.
I've heard tents on balconies too.
What?
Ever heard of that one?
Hey, Damien,
keep your eye open on that one. In the city, in Sydney, because the rallies turn up, put a tent on the balcony.
Imagine that. Mother-in-law out the back. Can I just check, what was Damien's sport? He said he was a sport.
Racing.
Credit of Airbnb, we left that morning. We're supposed to be there for 4 days, and we sent them an email saying, guys, this is not what was on the internet.
Well, Damien, you've been talking the whole time.
I've been talking this whole time,
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, good. Well, what's your sport?
We do motorsport racing. So car racing and go-karting.
Oh, God. Good on you, Dame. You want to plug your team? Tell us what's the name of your team.
Nexus Racing.
All right. Good on you, Dame.
Did you remember the big roll down the hill at Bathurst, down the Conrad? That was one of us.
Oh great. Oh.
Somebody
that's
will.
That's because you didn't get enough sleep at the Airbnb. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
On your Damien. We could talk all day, mate. We
couldn't. Well, he was. Who was he talking to? Wednesday night, not enough on TV for me. I found myself on ABC accidentally. started watching this show that Kath watches on Catch Up on ABC, right? She told me about it. I've looked over her shoulder a few times. Arne Doe's show, Brush with Fame.
It's great.
Ed beat Arne. Arne was supposed to have that Logie. That was supposed to be
I'm sure Mr. Doe will receive some Logies at some point.
All right. What a great show.
The premise is that he gets famous people in, and he's a quite a good painter. And so as he chats to them, he's actually doing their portrait.
Incredible. And he's a comedian. I always knew Arne Doe as a comedian. Next thing you know, he's able to paint. But he's a brilliant interviewer, and he gets these things out of people. I've watched the Megan Garr one.
Yep.
Watched the Wiggle one, Field.
Anthony Field.
Oh, that was brilliant too. He does some great work. Goes for half an hour, all wrapped up, and then he shows them the painting. Everyone's happy. Last night, Thorpe is the first person I've seen, looking over Cass shoulder, first person I've seen who wasn't happy with the painting.
Ooh.
He was distraught. Anyway.
Why?
Well, it was too harsh. Thorpe looks a bit like a human eel. You think he's our greatest ever swimmer.
Yeah.
So I was watching along anyway. They got to the gay bit.
Okay.
And you remember the years, for all those years, you were never allowed to even mention the size of his feet or anything about his sexuality. First time I'd really heard Thorpey open up when he said, you know, let's talk about you or when you came out being gay.
Are you happy you came out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wish I had earlier.
Mm.
You know, I was accused of being gay when I think I was 16 at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Like, I was still working it out for myself.
You're a kid, 16.
Yeah, that's right. So, and this is why it's important that we don't put pressure on people to come out. But because it was kind of like I was being accused of it, I'd always thought of it as that being a bad thing.
Did you hear that? Thorpey thought he was being accused of it. And do you remember when he was young, everyone went, oh, he's quite clearly gay.
Well,
I thought,
but it's no one's business but the person themselves. I've had
it's
personal
funny, really
experience
gave me an understanding.
This.
You've had personal experience.
Yeah, no, I'm not gay, but my mum is.
Your mum's gay. When did you find
out? How can your mum be gay?
That's just one of the best reactions I've ever had.
How can your mum be gay?
Well, she when I was 18, so my father died of a heart attack when I was 11. And so mum raised us, my sister and I, as a single mother until I turned 18 and my sister was 20. And then we were making the bed and I said to her, Mum, Who's this woman in it? No.
Yeah.
No, I said to Mum, I think it's about time that you got yourself someone, like get a nice fella. Oh, and she said, actually, I think I want to find a woman. Now, I didn't behave well, and I'm very ashamed to admit that this now.
Oh, God, you're only 18.
I dropped the kind of doona cover that I was stuffing and just walked out of the house and didn't talk to her for about 6 or 8 months until...
Whoa!
I know, and I am ashamed, but it wasn't about her being gay. I think it was just that I was shocked that I didn't know that about my mum, and we'd spent so much time as a threesome that I was just hurt that I hadn't... That hadn't have been something because she had a partner and you know that's a big deal.
At the time, had a partner.
Yeah, like she was telling us. Yeah, she was telling us. And
how long had she had that partner? Before
about 6 months.
So, but that's hard. How would she have hidden that from you guys? Did you know the woman and just thought she was a friend?
No. So she never brought her home. But I was 18. Like I'd got my license. I was going to pubs. Like I was so narcissistic. Yeah, of course. But now, like she's mum's really happy. I mean, my mum's 81, and she's been with the same woman for 20-odd years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So
that's unreal.
And you know, it's funny because I have asked her, and you know, not that we talk about it hugely, but my mum was open to any question and I said, did you always think that you were gay? And she said, well, when she was growing up in the 40s and 50s, it just wasn't something that was considered. You were always expected to go and get married and, you know, have kids stuff. So by the time she got to an age where she was in her late 40s, 50s, she went, actually, I'm going to give this a crack. And she's still there.
What a great story.
There you go. New every day.
Mano, Ed and Robin, the new Triple M.
Hey, can we just repeat Ross Greenwood? I saw him last night talking about the banks. This seems to be the biggest issue out of the budget.
So Australian banks are in exceptional health and we want our banks to be strong, unassailable. The question is whether they're healthy enough to withstand $6 billion extra coming out of them over the next 4 years. And yes, they will try to pass the rate rises on the customers because that's the way business works.
Who's going to police them? How are we going to stop this? Tom Godfrey from Choice. How are you, mate?
Yeah, going well.
Why do we have to have that passed on? Surely every year we hear the banks making massive amounts of profits. The four big ones have 75% of us banking with them. Surely they can afford to take that tax hit.
Of course they can. It's utter nonsense for them to suggest that they need to pass it on. And the message is loud and clear that the government doesn't want them to pass it on. Choice is certainly going to make sure that if they do pass it on, that they hear about it. And one of the other things that's sort of flying under the radar in this budget, which I think will help mean that they won't pass it on, is the fact that we're now going to get open data. So you and I can request access to our information from one of these major banks that's going to be hit with this tax and ask them to send it to a competitor. So for the first time, you can now take your information from the bank and seek out a better and cheaper deal. So I think the key point here to remember is that this only affects the big five banks. There are 135 other deposit-taking institutions in Australia who will be more than happy to offer you a competitive deal. And you've got to remember, the big five banks have been moving interest rates out of cycle. They've been hitting you with excessive credit card interest rates. They've been serving up the vast majority of the population pretty poor products for many, many years. So they're on notice, and I think it would be very, very silly of them to pass this on to consumers.
Tom, can I just check, who are the big five? ANZ, Commonwealth, Westpac, NAB.
And St George, that's right. So, you look, I mean, they're huge. They dominate the market. And what tends to happen if you have a home loan with them, then you get your savings account with them, your credit card with them.
Yep.
And then what they've been doing as well is moving into financial advice and services. And look, not a year goes by where there isn't some terrible scandal, you know, some clear and shocking example of misconduct. And there's good news on that front as well, because the budget has also beefed up the fines. And the big five banks will be hit with fines of up to $200 million for misconduct. So I think it's fair to say that this budget has put the banks on notice. They were really pushing their social contract with the community. And I think this levy is, you know, they are more than capable of absorbing this without passing it on. And it will also be a real test for competition in the market, because we know that there is really no effective competition between the major banks and the second tier lenders. So look, if they pass it on, I think you might see a huge tide of people rushing to the other 135 deposit taking institutions to get a better deal.
Tom Godfrey from Choice talking about the new bank levy and whether or not they will be passing it on to the consumers, i.e. us. Yes, they will. They're using Anna Bligh, a former Queensland Premier, as their front woman to talk about why, it's terrible and we have to pass it on. So it's nice to see that the politicians claiming to have represented us all these years still have our best interests at heart. Tom Godfrey from Choice Magazine, thanks very much for your time. The story starts clutching a vomit bag, using a breathing apparatus and struggling to speak. An ill Clive Palmer has got an adjournment of his federal court testimony until next week. This, forgive me for being skeptical, but it was all a bit Christopher Skase from back in the day and all of these guys who get hauled in after their business dealings and going, hey, what's going on? I'm sick. So Mel, I'm going to get your last name incorrect. Petrinek, am I getting that right, Mel?
No, that's right.
Mel Petrinek, chief court reporter at the Courier-Mail. Mel, you were actually in court. What on earth was going on with Clive Palmer?
Yeah, I mean, I should say from the outset, he has been sick. He did have an operation on March 20 to get his gallstones out. Okay. But it was still a surprise to see him in the state that he was yesterday, I think I can safely say.
Was he was he banging it on?
Oh, look, I can't say that either way. It was certainly quite... Yeah, it was quite full on. Like, yeah, he was clutching the sick bag. We walked into court, saw him outside lying on the couch with a pillow under his head and had some kind of breathing apparatus. So, yeah, it was pretty full on. I can't say if he was bunging it on, but...
pancreatitis is a wicked, wicked thing if you get it.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Because you can usually tell if someone is grey and just doesn't look right. I mean, I think everyone has to expect cynicism from someone like Clive. I mean, what's the general feel in the court?
Look, the general feel, he is a man who has been sick. He said that he ate something bad last week and it sort of set off the issue again. The vomit bag and all of that was quite, theatrical. He might have needed it, yeah.
But they're props. They look like, you know, they're props to sort of aid the idea. Now, what was he trying to get moved? His evidence, this is all relating to Queensland Nickel, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
He did end up giving evidence briefly for about an hour and a half or so about where his nephew, Clive Menzink, is. That's the guy who's been overseas since June.
That was a convoluted tale, and it involved his father-in-law and everything else. Where has young Clivey Menzink been?
Well, you know, he's been on a couple of cruises, a lucky guy. He's been in the Caribbean, he's been in Europe, but interestingly, for the first time we heard that he's been in Sofia in Bulgaria a couple of times, which is where Clive's in-laws are from.
Doing what?
I don't know. He was in a hotel, apparently, and Clive said something about a woman and then was cut off, and that was the last we heard of it.
Right, okay. talking to Mel Petronek, the chief court reporter at the Courier-Mail, who is in court with the Clive Palmer proceedings. Oh, people will be wondering, Mel, all of the workers that have been dudded by Queensland Nickel and the many, many people that lost their jobs, does it look like they're going to get anything out of all this, Mel?
It's still hard to say. My gut feeling is it's going to be quite a few years down the track. Mm-hmm. There's still a long way to go, which is heartbreaking for those people who lost their jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Mel Petronek, chief court reporter at the Courier-Mail. You can read more about it on the website or in the paper. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.